On a parched plain dotted with brown hardy trees, a young black boy runs.
Mo Farah's coming down the straightaway.
He's got to find something extra. He's got to kick on. Farah's going to make it 2 gold medals for Great Britain. The place erupts. He's the double Olympic champion.
I don't even know where to start, mate.
I've had an amazing career.
Mo Farah, Olympic gold number 4.
I have achieved everything I ever dreamed of.
Mo Farah.
Britain's greatest ever athletics Olympian.
But there's something about me you don't know. It's a secret that I've been hiding since I was a child.
Because you came to the UK from Somalia when you were 8?
8 years old, yeah. And to me, even to face it and talk about the facts, how it happened, why it happened, it's tough. The truth is, I'm not who you think I am. And now, whatever the cost, I need to tell my real story.
The young boy on the parched plain walks forward and stops. The real Mo Farah. Sunlight through treetops. A boy's on a trampoline in a garden.
Hussein, dinner
Where
time.
Where are you, Hussein?
Come on, it's your favourite.
Come on, stand for dinner.
The youngster jumps down from the large trampoline.
Family means everything to me. And, you know, as a parent, you always teach your kids to be honest. But I feel like I've always had that private thing where I can never be me or tell what's really happened. I've been keeping this for so long. It's been difficult because you don't want to face it. And often my kids ask questions, Dad, how comes this? And you always got an answer for everything. But you haven't got an answer for that. That's the main reason I'm telling my story, because I want to feel normal. I don't feel like you're holding on to something.
Tanya, Mo's wife.
I first met Mo in school. He was always smiling. That's what stood out about Mo, is amongst the groups of grumpy teenagers, Mo was always happy-go-lucky. We were engaged by 2009. And it was during that period of time, sort of the year leading up to us being married, that I felt like there was lots of missing pieces to his story. Behind the smile, there was something there. And that's when I started to ask questions.
So this is the autobiography of Mo's life. The story in here, which is the story I always knew of Mo growing up, was that he was born in Mogadishu, Somalia, and at the age of about 8 or 9, he came to the UK with his mum and 2 of his brothers to live with his father.
That was the story that you believed to be true?
Yeah, until I found out otherwise.
I didn't know much about his parents at the time, and I'd never seen them or heard him talk about them. It wasn't until, I think I'd worn him down, really, with all the questioning, that he eventually just said, look, that's not how it happened.
It was hard for me to tell her because I never really talk about it. It's more back of my mind and it's been for years.
He just sort of matter-of-factly told me, this is really what happened. And I was gobsmacked.
Most people know me as Mo Farah, but it's not my name or it's not the reality. The real story is I was born in Somaliland, north of Somalia, as Hussein Abdi Kahin. Despite what I've said in the past, my parents never lived in the UK. When I was 4, my dad was killed in a civil war. You know, as a family, we were torn apart. I was separated from my mother, and I was brought into the UK illegally under the name of another child called Mohammed Farah.
Tanya and Mo.
This is the visa document.
Yeah, this is the visa to come to the UK, and this was the document we came with.
You would have been 9, you hadn't turned 10 yet.
Yeah. That is my photo, but it's not my name. From that moment, coming in with a different name and different identity. I know I've taken someone else's place, but And I do wonder, what is Muhammad doing now? And in the picture here, there's the lady who brought me into the UK.
So this woman wasn't your mother?
No. On paper, it's my mum, but it's not really my mum.
I don't think we ever really have gotten to the bottom of why she brought you here. That, to me, is the $64,000 question.
For me, for years, just keep blocking it out. And you can only block it out for so much. Now, I'm just piecing everything together, taking myself back to that moment in Africa.
1993 on a timeline.
I was 9 years old. I thought I was going out to Europe to live with relatives. I remember getting on a plane with this lady. She's got two kids. I'm like, I'm excited because I've never been on a plane before. So we got off the plane with the woman and her kids. I'm going around, looking around, just amazed. We go through passport check and the lady going, yeah, don't forget Muhammad. I was like, yeah, Muhammad. Because that was on the document.
A reenactment of passport control.
Stamp. Go through. On the other side, she says to me, don't say anything. Don't talk. This is your name. That's it. We see this man standing, just looking around. In Somali, I can understand clear. Where's Muhammad? Where is he? He was her husband, and their family name was Farah. He was waiting for them and his oldest son, Muhammad. That's when I realized I had taken Muhammad's place. She talks to him. Don't know what she said to him. But at that point, we get in the car. I had all the contact details for my relative. And once we got to the house, the lady took it off me and right in front of me, ripped them up and put it in the bin. And at that moment, I knew I was in trouble.
In the present, aerial views of a sprawling city and traffic on road networks. Mo is driving a car in Hounslow, West London.
I've been scared to go back to my old house for many, many years. I've never taken that route. I often drive past it on the motorway where you can see on the other side and you go, oh, I used to live in them flats. Not great memories. So this is the road here. So number 5 would have been just there in the middle.
He parks and walks towards the red brick building. Candy floss clouds drift across the sun in a blue sky.
So that's the living room. And I'll spend hours and hours in that room. When the man was around, I was treated very differently. But he was never there or working or something. Often we wouldn't see him for weeks. But from day one, the lady, what she did wasn't right. I wasn't treated as part of the family. I was always that kid who did everything. I don't know, more someone like who works for you, just, you know, that's your space, that's our space, this is what you do. If I wanted food in my mouth, my job was to look after those kids, shower them, cook for them, clean for them. And she said, if you ever want to see your family again, don't say anything. If you say anything, they will take you away. Often I would just lock myself in the bathroom and cry and nobody's there to help. So after a while, I just, you know, learn not to have that emotion.
Mo's talking outside and stares up at the flat from a railing.
And I remember just putting up with everything that she ever said. The anger and just the screaming. I told myself one day I will see my real family. That's what was going through my mind and kept telling myself day and day again, I will see them one day.
Back in his sleek white car, Mo drives past a mural of him along with Sir Mo Farah in bold black lettering on the side of an industrial building.
I wanted to go to school. She was like, No, you can't. It's not time yet. You can't leave the house. I want to go. No, you can't. Eventually, she let me go and end up going to Feltham Community College, it was called. That was year 7.
Oh. We both went to Feltham School.
Oh, God.
Feltham was predominantly white. I would say it was a very small minority of us that were either non-white or mixed.
Going to school was always difficult for me. My English wasn't great. It's such a big shock in terms of having different culture. Often you don't even know, what should I say, what do I need to say, how should I behave? So I did struggle.
When Mo came to the school, we had very confused messages about his past. We were having meeting after meeting, trying to discover and work out exactly what his background was.
Mohammed is a refugee from Somalia who arrived in this country in November 93. The school report that Mohammed is experiencing difficulties in all areas of the curriculum. Mohammed is disruptive in most lessons and can become involved in fights in the classroom.
And this is the Hausa language service. Parents, country of origin, Somalia. Mohammed lives with his mother, who is not an English speaker. Parents separated. Father living nearby. No phone at home.
Mo's form tutor.
As time went on, we had incredible behaviour difficulties with Mo across the school, and we needed to speak to somebody. Mo's family never turned up. He was coming into school, he was unkempt, he was uncared for, and we were more and more worried that the family wasn't as it should be, and in fact Mo was not being supported in the right way when he was at home.
Parents not attending meetings with head of year. Emotionally and culturally alienated. There is a feeling of frustration and isolation about him. I feel sad when I'm with him.
If I asked Mo to explain to me what was going on or where his parents were, why hadn't they come in, he would say that they were busy. He was very quick to change the subject. He would also pretend not to understand. It was very difficult to get a coherent answer from him about anything that was going on in the home.
Often I never talk about anything because I couldn't. I was scared what will happen later on.
So she told you don't talk about anything?
Anything. Otherwise she... I was in big trouble. And I guess for me, only thing that I could do in my control to run away from this was get out and run.
A colour photo of a young Mo running with several white boys his age. Alan Watkinson, Mo's PE teacher.
When I first met Mo, he had very, very little English, and the only language he really seemed to understand was the language of PE and sport. Mo was a particularly good sportsman, that was obvious. We put him in a race and he won it. We put him in another race and he won it. And every race we put him in, he pretty much always won and then started winning them by a long distance. So that wasn't difficult to spot. The fact that he was doing so well in his sport, I would talk to teachers about that. I would talk to his former teacher, Sarah Rennie, and to other people that could really support him. He's not just the boy that you see that's getting involved in fights. He's not just the boy that you see in your lesson that doesn't appear to be taking any notice. He's actually, you know, got quite a little bit more to him than that.
As a kid, you just know who's good and not. It's your instinct. Alan, I just feel like that trust, because often I think I saw him as well as a PE teacher, as someone who's really generally does care. He was inviting me to, you know, to go to the running club, join the athletics club, and encouraging me and me making up all these excuses saying, I can't do it. I couldn't do it for a reason, but I couldn't stay. I had to go back home straight. It got to a point where it was like I needed to tell somebody what was going through. I needed help.
The school sports hall and studio's changing room.
Mo came to see me with another student from Somalia who spoke very good English, and they came into the changing room.
We just finished PE. I think once we finished the game, the changing room cleared up.
They were being quite serious, you know, normally very, very jolly
I was scared, but I couldn't go back there. And I couldn't put up with this anymore. And that's the point.
I told him everything.
Mo told me he wasn't the son of the person that he was living with. That he'd been brought over to do all the jobs, look after the smaller children. He also then explained that actually his name wasn't Mohammed Farah. He was removed from his family, that he was given a new identity and brought over here to do jobs and chores. That was obviously quite a shocking revelation to hear.
I just had to do something, I don't know. I just had to get out. Whatever way I could get out, I had to get out.
Mo walking his old school's corridors, and overhead lighting comes on.
The next day, I took what he'd said to the senior leadership at the school. I think Mo thought that a magic wand would be waved, and he turned up at school basically with all of his belongings, expecting that he was going to be moved. So I had to explain to him that that wasn't the case. The next step would be that social services would be contacted.
I told the social workers, my name is not Mo, my name is Hussein. I have family somewhere, but I don't have any contact. And I didn't know whether they were alive or not. That was the hardest thing. But to be honest, I was not concerned about name or anything. I was more concerned about my own safety and me being free. And I remember going, OK, just take me somewhere. Take me somewhere.
Somebody else in the Somalian community who had a child at the school offered to take Mo in. And that offer was waved through by social services.
It was my friend's mum, Kinsey. She really took care of me. And I was happy there. And then I stayed for a couple of days, weeks, months, ended up staying 7 years.
Young Mo, a.k.a. Hussein, with his friend's family. Tinsel decorations behind them.
I still miss my real family, but from that moment, everything got better. I felt like a lot of stuff was lifted over my shoulders and I felt like me. And that's when Mo came out, the real Mo, just being free.
From that point on, he was Mohammed Farah. Nobody addressed what he had said in terms of his identity, and Mo just became Mo. It was just a remarkable transformation. We had good runners before, we'd had good athletes before, but the progress from there was just stratospheric.
A long list of young Mo's athletic achievements scrolls over footage of Mo starting a race.
And what's your name?
Mohammed Farah.
What's your ambitions? Olympics?
Yeah.
Imagine it.
He started to win national races by 30 seconds to a minute. And
come on, Mohammed!
You could see that it was effortless.
Mo definitely stood out as a rising star.
That's the winner of the 3,000 metres, Mohammed Farah.
He was winning every race that he took part in. Whether it was at school for the borough or at the English schools, he would always make winning look easy.
Another list of young Mo's athletic achievements and the vast majority of first places.
At the age of 14, Mo was selected to compete for English schools in Latvia. And it wasn't really very clear what Mo's immigration status was. You know, he didn't have the documentation that he would need to travel. So we started that process of getting him the British citizenship as Mohammed Farah.
Years scroll forward on the timeline to 2021.
There are a range of comprehensive measures that look at border force, more powers as well, to deter illegal entry to the United Kingdom.
I remember being excited to represent your country and not being able to compete was hard because it felt like, you know, you got to that position and now, you know, you can't do it because you don't have paperwork.
Mo is driving.
Now I've decided to, you know, come forward and to tell the truth. I need to understand how I got my citizenship. And Alan kept lots of documents.
Alan has a large plastic box.
This is the box, man. There's loads of stuff in here. Wow. There's loads of papers about your citizenship. We just bombarded them with communication about this. Getting Mo to the point where, you know, he had his British citizenship was quite a long process. It involved a couple of trips to the Home Office, lots of letters and form filling.
that I'm writing to you concerning a pupil we have at school. His name is Mohamed Farah, and he's an asylum seeker from Somalia. We'd very much like him to obtain his British citizenship so that he can run in the World Athletics Championships and represent Great Britain.
I wouldn't even read any of this. I didn't know how much process went in. I just remember at that moment, I want to compete, and I just didn't think.
There was a lot going on in the background.
It was 3 or 4 years after he had made the disclosure to me that his identity wasn't Mohamed Farah, and by that point, nobody was thinking back to the time he'd come over with a different identity. You know, he was Mo.
So on the 25th of July in 2000, you got that letter, which says, "We're pleased to enclose a certificate of registration as a British citizen." That's the document that showed that you are Mohamed Farah and known as Mohamed Farah in this country.
Yeah. 25th of July 2000, that was the date. But honestly, for me, it's been years of just back of your mind, and I think taking this step, the last thing I want to do in terms of being honest is cause a problem for you. I don't even know what's going to happen.
You told me the school knew about it, everybody knew about it, but when you went through the process of social services, you stayed as Mohamed Farah. To my mind, at that point, the state had recognised you as Mohamed Farah. It's only recently, really, that I've thought about it and questioned whether actually I did anything wrong in this scenario. But when I think back, I don't think either I or the school did do anything wrong. You were Mohamed Farah.
I always wonder, how did I get to that position, or how did this happen? I guess I wasn't meant to be here. How did I end up being here?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that just strikes me is the year before you came to school, I taught another boy called Mohamed Farah.
No, you didn't.
There's another boy called Mohamed Farah at the school, and he was there for about a couple of months at most, and he just disappeared.
Gone.
Nobody knew what had happened to him or where he went. But you know, thinking back now and thinking about your story, was there any connection at all between that Mohamed Farah and your circumstances?
Oh, now they got me thinking and going, where's that boy? What is he doing? Has he got family? Has he got kids? Is he alive? What is he doing? I often think about the other Mohamed Farah, the boy whose place I took on that plane, and I really hope he's okay. Wherever he is, I carry his name, and that could cause problems now for me and my family. The important thing is for me to just be able to look, this is what's happened, and just being honest, really.
Mo's lawyers.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Tanya?
Yes.
I'm Alan Braddock. Mo?
Hi, Mo.
Hi, hello. Nice to meet you.
You too. Hi.
All right, grab a seat. Yep. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, well, thank you so much for coming in today. So obviously we want to take you both through the advice.
And it's just in relation to the risk, you know, to your British nationality status, so you're entirely clear on what it means to publicly reveal how you acquired your British nationality.
From what we have seen, the application for your nationality, when it was made, there were false representations made in that application, which means essentially that your nationality was obtained by fraud or misrepresentations. There is a power in law, therefore, to take away your British nationality.
Okay. Well, but when I first went to the social workers, did it not trigger anything, or did something not come up at all?
Unfortunately, nothing was passed to any relevant authorities that would have decided your immigration application, so it was completely not known to the Home Office.
That's where the danger of them taking away your citizenship comes from.
Surely there would have still been a protocol back then for a child who has been taken unwillingly from one country to another.
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, the definition of trafficking is transportation for exploitative purposes. In your case, you were obliged as a very small child yourself to look after children and to basically be a domestic servant. And then you told the relevant authorities, this is not my name. All of those things combined to make the risk that the Home Office would take away your nationality is lessened. But we don't have a crystal ball, so we want to be absolutely clear that although we think it's a small risk, there is a real risk that that is what will happen.
Will this have any impact on my kids and my wife, my family, I guess?
It won't have any impact legally for Tanya or your kids. Obviously, it will if they deprive you of your nationality, then sure, as a family, that will affect you. But legally, from their position, no, it will not affect them at all.
It's scary that there would be some risk to Mo's citizenship. There's no hiding it. It's a scary thought. I think we'll just have to see how it goes.
Yeah, no, we'll just see what happens. Hi. Hello, Amani.
Mo's kids return home.
How was school?
Good.
Did you have... Hi, Amani. You all right? Was it good school good?
Yeah.
It is scary, the thought that I'm putting everything at risk. But I need to do this. And someone who could help is the woman who took me in, Kinsey. Kinsey is related to the family who brought me into the UK. So she may know the truth about how and why I ended up here. But I've lost contact with her. And then there's my real family back in Somaliland, who were there from the start.
The timeline goes back to 1990. Cattle moving across a dusty plain.
I've got some good memories at Somaliland. And for us, we lived in the farm with my father. My father's name was Abdi. It was very basic, just farm. All I remember clearly is just being with my loved ones. My mum and dad, my brothers, sisters, my twin brother, Hassan, and being their family.
In a reconstruction, Mo is a young boy, also known as Hussein Abdi Kahin, walks into focus, staring directly at the camera.
When I was four, I was a kid, but we were just out in the farm, normal day. My dad went to look after cattle, never came back. And due to civil war happening between the north and the south, there were a lot of people fighting where he was, and there was a massive bazooka shot. Hit the ground, flew into pieces, and one piece hit him on the head and just straight off the head, yeah.
4-year-old Mo running over dusty ground.
And at that point, that was it. And that, our life has changed. And changed all of us. To me, the hardest thing is, till this day, is like, I don't even know what he looked like.
A man herding cattle over a dusty track. And then Mo and Tanya at their London home.
This was in my room at uni. I would just take as many pictures as I could and then get it developed, and then just all around my room just put pictures of different memories.
You were almost obsessive with taking pictures and then keeping them. And you said to me, because growing up, you never had a picture of your dad?
Yeah. Well, growing up as a kid, I did have memories, but I never had any pictures of anyone I was really close with.
I think Mo himself hadn't really accepted what had happened to him growing up. The death, the murder even, of your father, and the circumstances of your family being torn apart and you being sent across the world. But he just wasn't ready, and he was able instead to just channel all of that pent-up emotion into his running.
It was early 2000, and at this point, I'm running for Great Britain. I'm doing okay. And I think there was a lot of media out there in terms of, you know, a young Somali kid, grew up in the UK, he's doing well.
I hope a very happy Mohamed Farah, winning a silver medal at the European Junior Cross Country Championships.
I think that's when people in Somaliland kind of noticed I was in the UK. Can I just say hello to all my mates at the uni and that? See later. Again.
All right.
I was living with Kinsey, and I was just helping out in a restaurant, Somali restaurant, where all the Somali people would come, chat, and there was a lady live in the UK. And the lady often saw me there a lot. And this lady comes in and says, oh, yeah, I was in Somaliland. I was like, Somaliland? And she's like, what's your name? Mohammed. Okay. What's your real name? And at that point, I think I can kind of talk about it. And she's like, Hussein. What's your mum's name? I told her mum's name. She goes, okay. Well, I saw your mum. I was like, saw my mum? She's alive. And she's like, yeah, she's alive. Here's the photo. So if you don't believe me, if you think I'm a stranger, here's the photo. And then she said, look, this is a cassette tape for you. I remember just wanted so badly to get out the restaurant and go to listen to it.
A reconstruction of Mo playing the cassette tape in his bedroom through headphones.
It wasn't just a tape. It was more of a voice. And then it was singing certain songs for me, like poems or like traditional songs, you know. And I would listen to it for days, weeks.
To the light of my eyes and joy of my soul, you are part of my body and my life. You are the body I birthed, born from Abdi Kahin. To the light of my eye, Hussein, my dear son, I wish no evil harm on you. A Somali woman speaking the words.
My mum's name is Aisha. I'll never forget my mum on that tape.
Mo's mother continues. A mother and child are never distant, except in death. But I had a motherly urge to find him, and I was made aware he was in the UK.
Inside the tape, it had a number on it, like, say, or a call on the back of it. This is the number. And then I remember he said, if this is a bother or causing you trouble, don't just leave it. You don't have to contact me. And I'm going, I mean, no, of course I'm going to contact you. And at that point, that's when I first called my mum.
I had been helpless for 10 years, more than 10 years. When I heard him, I felt like throwing the phone on the floor and being transported to him from all the joy I felt.
I just remember going, Mum? Yeah, she's like, yeah, you do.
The excitement and joy of getting a response from him made me forget everything that happened.
How's Hassan? He's doing good. And I remember that moment was just to know that your mum's okay and she's alive. And they're all okay. For me, it was like, everyone's okay.
When I found him, I did like this, like this, like this. She gestures to come closer.
All I wanted to do is to go and see my family out in Somaliland. I saved up enough money. I had quite a lot of hair, shaved my hair because I was scared I'll stand out. And then going my first trip, going, I'm going to go and see my brother, my mum.
Flying over Brown Hills.
The plane took forever. France, Djibouti, Somaliland, Hargeisa. As I was coming out the plane, I could see my twin brother, Hassan, and just see them alive. At that point, my brother's hugging me, my brother. I had tears in my eyes.
Mo is being driven along a dusty road across an arid, open terrain.
It's been 20 years since that first visit home, and my twin, Hassan, has picked me up from the airport again. I've come back to Somaliland to try and get some answers and to show my son Hussein where I grew up before I had to leave my family. You see that boy just looking after like cows. My dad was doing exactly the same thing as that when he got killed. And that was the start. We all had to be separated. If it wasn't for that moment, I don't know what life would have been. Would I have become who I am? Would I have gone through what I've gone through in life? Only one person that can tell me on why and how is my mum. We're going to go and see Grandma.
Yay!
Mo hugs his son in the back of the car that sends up clouds of dust from the dry tracks it follows.
We're here at the farm.
They're waving leaves.
The community claps and waves branches as they arrive. The girls and women are wearing colourful headdresses. Mo holds his son's hand as they climb out. Mo then hugs his mother, who kisses his cheeks and does the same to little Hussein.
Are you?
It felt amazing. That's my real mom. They are my real brothers. And I think as a kid growing up here, I was just me. And that was my name, that was my twin brother, that's my mom, this is the village. This is the people. This is where I'm from.
People welcome Mo to the village with smiles and warm embraces. As he passes a row of women and children singing and waving branches, he smiles and waves to them.
After my dad was killed during the Civil War, me and Hassan were sent away from the farm to live with relatives across the border in Djibouti. I'm hoping my mom and Hassan and my older brother Faisal can help me understand why I was taken to the UK.
Mum, do you remember this? Mo passes his mother a photograph. She says, "Oh my." He continues, "It was the first time I got in contact with you before I came over. The first time that we spoke to each other. Did you ever think you would see me again?" She wags her fingers, saying, "No. No, never in my life did I think I would see you or your children alive. We were living in a place with nothing, no cattle and destroyed land. We all thought we were dying. Boom, boom, boom was all we heard. I sent you away because of the war. I sent you off to your uncle in Djibouti so you could have something. Remember, I sent Hassan to Djibouti after you. Mum, who made the decision that I was going to leave Djibouti and go to England?" "No one told me. I lost contact with you. We didn't have phones, roads, or anything. There was nothing here. The land was devastated. Look, I left you both with your uncle, including him." Hassan says, "They told us that night we would all go together. When I went to sleep, they put you on the train. When I woke up, you had already left. I wondered why they left me behind that night and did not take me with you. That's how you left. That night was the last time I saw you." Mo's mother continues, "I know you left, but I had no idea where you were exactly." Mo asks, "No one told you?" "No one told me. No one." "Mum, the name Mo Farah belonged to someone else. Do you know where he is?" "The other person who had that name. I don't know anything about him. Whenever I see you, I just call you by the name I gave you. I named you Hussein, and that was your name. Hussein Abdi Kahin. Isn't that right?" Mo says, "I'm taking a big risk, telling the world my story. What do you think?" "It makes me happy, whichever way I think of it." Hassan adds, "You were given a name that was not yours, sent away to England, a country you knew nothing about. It's important that you tell your story. Lying is a sin."
When I told them there will be a risk me doing this, they kind of understood. And it says it's the truth. It is what it is. You are who you are. There's no denying that.
Mo and his son are amongst a group of people standing with their arms out in prayer.
It was very important for me and my son to see my dad's grave and pray for him.
They're standing in front of a mound of rocks and stones.
My father named me Hussein, and I know over the years my name's changed. But my father never knew anything. That's the name he and my mom decided. And it was important to me to carry on the name. So my son, I named him Hussein.
Young Hussein joins in with the adults, adding rocks onto the pile. The sun shining fiercely upon a city amidst the desert. The car drives down a street that's partially flooded and strewn with debris. Djibouti.
Before I leave Africa, there's one more place I want to show Hussein. This street in Djibouti is where I was sent after my father's death. It's from here that I was taken to the UK. All right, let's go. I will show you. This is where I used to live, Hussein. This is the house.
People are watching Mo and Hussein getting out of the car.
It's the first time I've been back to this house since I was 9 years old. And the people who live here say that my relatives left a long time ago. This gentleman now owns it for you? But yeah, his aunt used to own the house. At the time when we were living here, which I didn't know, I thought we owned it, but we didn't. We were renting it off his family. Well, I guess I was so young at the time, it's difficult in my mind to know exactly what's happened, really. But being in this house, I do remember some things very clear. The idea came for me to go out to Europe and live with my relatives. I never questioned that. I was like, yeah, excited, and that's when it all began. Remember how this lady turns up at my house? Don't know who she is, but obviously the family knew her somehow. Remember her coming to the house a few times, kind of looking at me, what I do, what I look like. And then later on, my family going, yeah, you're going to go with this lady. She's got two kids. You're going to go to Europe. But when you go there, your name is Mohammed. And I remember going, what? Is my real name going to change? As a kid, you never even think beyond what you've been told. Never thought in a minute you're going to go with a stranger and be stuck there. And the hardest thing is admitting to myself that someone from my own family may have been involved in trafficking me.
A plane landing, papers being stamped, a baggage carousel, London.
I think that thought has been at the back of my mind for a long, long time. But I've never really spoken about any of this till now.
Kate Garbers, trafficking expert.
Okay, how are you? You okay?
Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. When I was 9 years old, brought to the UK, the completely different name, not the name was given to me by my parents, kept in the house, taken care of other kids as well.
That could potentially fit a type of trafficking called domestic servitude. And domestic servitude is a type of forced labour, yeah. But it's forced labour in someone's home. And it's really, really tricky to identify it because it happens behind closed doors.
Yeah. What's the long-term effect on this? Do you ever get over it? Or will it always just be there?
Wow, that's a big question. But I think the very fact that you're starting to think about these things 20, 30 years after they've happened shows that it's a long and complicated journey. And sometimes with potential victims, they feel guilty as well because they feel like they were part of it. Well, I said yes to travelling, or I said yes to the job, or and so there, lots of their kind of process is dealing with the fact that actually they were taken advantage of and it wasn't their fault at all.
I don't know, part of me is like, I didn't know any better, and you're just a child, you're going the other side, you get excited. And I remember being very, very excited and couldn't wait, couldn't sleep. And then you go, and then 3 or 4 months later, you rock bottom. I know I'm almost 40, but it's been so, so long in my mind. And it's scary to go public with this.
I think it is incredibly brave because I think we do live in a hostile environment where the issues of trafficking and smuggling and illegal immigration all kind of get conflated. Last year in the UK, over 10,000 potential victims of trafficking were identified. And that's the tip of the iceberg. The real numbers might be up to 100,000 potential victims. So for you to come forward will hopefully challenge people's perceptions of what slavery and trafficking is and who it might happen to.
Yeah. I had no idea there were so many people who are going through exactly the same thing that I did. It just shows how lucky I was. So many moments in my life where it could have gone this way or that way. But what really saved me, what made me different, was that I could run.
So to the much anticipated men's 5,000 metre final.
2012 was such a huge year. I remember thinking, gosh, this is all or nothing. This is something he's dreamed about since he was a kid.
And there's Mo Farah.
What sort of race will it be?
Being out on the running field is a way of, for me, having two separate lives, if that makes sense.
Mo Farah looks very comfortable. He's got the basic speed.
But you have that moment where you just do what you do.
Mo Farah's looking to go, and with just three laps to go, it's now going to be a real race.
You know, the noise in the stadium was just remarkable. And I was sitting almost with my head in my hands, watching through my fingers.
The big kick has started, but Mo Farah gritting his teeth now.
Alan and I both knew what had gone into getting Mo to that point, what he'd been through as a kid, as a very young child.
The arms have got to pump, the knees have got to come up high. He's got to find something extra.
It's going to be a cracking last 100 metres.
I was in bits, I was crying. I knew the story, and the story was just a crazy, ridiculous story that you couldn't make up.
He's got to kick hard. Come on, Mo Farah. Gabriel Maskell is coming, but I think he's going to get there. Farah is going to make it. Two gold medals for Great Britain. Beautiful. The place he rocks. He's the double Olympic champion.
He makes his signature Mobot gesture.
Yeah, the enormity of it was just difficult to comprehend.
Wonderful, wonderful double.
After 2012, my life changed. Suddenly, I wasn't Mo. I was Mo, the boy who'd won two Olympic gold medals in front of his hometown. The press getting involved. Who is he? What does he do? Where's his family?
I was doorstepped by the Mirror and the Sun, who both came to me to find out where had this boy come from, what's his story.
And the hardest things for me, just not being honest.
Because you came to the UK from Somalia when you were eight?
8 years old, yeah. Just remember being excited and, you know, seeing my dad was a big part for me. It was just going there. And I was just excited to come off the plane, met him. And,
you know, you're a role model and it's a wonderful thing for the country.
My mind, I don't think I was ever ready to say anything. Not because you want to lie, but because you're protecting yourself. I think you only realise later on down the line it's okay to let things out and say how it happened.
A framed photo of Mo in formal dress displaying his medal after receiving his knighthood.
So what do you think happened?
I never like to see anything bad or anything. Like, I always try and turn into a positive or have a positive spin on it. And go, oh, no, that's not what it is. But in this, I think I was trafficked. That's what it feels like.
The question is, will we ever get the truth? I mean, we've got some information that gives us an idea, but someone that might be able to help give us some insight, who is connected to a lot of this, is Kinsey.
Yeah. It's not going to be easy speaking to Kinsey, because I've not spoken to her for many, many years. But I think she will have a lot of answers, if she's willing to talk to me.
It's definitely worth trying.
Yeah.
A photo of a young woman with children and a baby in a room decorated with tinsel. On a wet and dreary day, Mo's driving along a busy London street.
Kinsey is my aunt. I call her my aunt. It's a respect. But really, she's not my aunt. She's the sister of the man who was waiting for me at the airport. And the sister-in-law of the lady who brought me to the UK. Time where things were really difficult for me. Kinsey is that one person took me under her wing and welcomed me to her house. I lost contact with Kinsey. Maybe there's part of me wanted not to know what went on or how it happened. I've been hiding this for
over 20 years. But the other side of it, it's like, I want to know, why was I brought to the UK in the name of another child, a boy called Mohammed Farah, and Kinsey's the aunt of the other Mohammed Farah.
A residential street.
It's taken a long time to get back in contact with Kinsey. But today, finally, I'm meeting her and her family, and I hope she's got some answers.
A woman in pink robes opens the door, Kinsey Farah.
Hi, Edo. Salaam alaikum.
Kinsey and Mo embrace warmly.
You okay?
Mo hugs members of Kinsey's family, who are all wearing broad smiles.
See the pictures? Get ready.
Who's that boy there?
Oh, my days.
Well, you don't mind going blonde again, do you?
If I had hair, I would. Huh?
We're so happy today to see you. Welcome to the family again.
Thank you.
The young Mo, or Hussein, wearing a party hat.
It's been difficult to understand why did I come to the UK and there's no one else but other than you who maybe can help.
My brother, he went to the Heathrow airport. He said he's going to collect his children and his wife, and you come back with my brother. And we're shocked. Then I said, who is this boy? Because I know my brother's son, how he look.
Yeah.
You don't look like him.
No.
Then the lady said, this boy, his family, they all died. The father, the mother, the sisters, the brothers, they all died. And everyone feels sorry for you, and we give you love, and we accept you how you are.
Yeah. Do you know why the lady brought me under a different name?
Not really. And when we ask her who's this boy, she tell us, this boy, he don't have no one else. That's why I bring him here. That's it. Then I saw you always, you know, happy. You're crying. Then I try to find out what's going on with you. The lady, she always make you to do the housework, to have the kids, to give them the milk, to change the napkin, all these things.
Do you think that was her reason when she brought me to UK, helping her, cooking, cleaning?
I don't know. But what I know, she didn't bring you as a human being to help you, no. You call me, say you're in the front of the house with the social services.
Yeah.
Then they told me, do you know this boy? I said, yes. He said, this woman, she brought him in this country. She's not his mother. I say, yes, he's not. Then they ask me, you his aunt? I say, yes, I'm his aunt. You going to have him? I say, yes, I'm going to have him.
Yeah.
From that night, you with us.
Social services thought you were my aunt, but you weren't really. You were just there.
Yeah, I'm not your aunt, but you got my brother's name.
Yeah.
And your child. You need someone to protect you.
No, for sure.
Yeah.
Even myself, I remember this.
And if I tell you the truth, this is not your fault. This name is gift. Allah gives to you, and they bring you here with that name, and you went up and up and up and up and up. But still, it's good to have your real name.
Yeah. Another thing is always like, I don't know, in my mind, I think about it. What happened to that other Mohammed Farah? Has he ever been to the UK before, Mohammed?
Never. He didn't come at all.
Do you keep in touch? Do you know where he is? How he's doing?
We lost contact. Then I found his Facebook.
Yeah.
Then we spoke several times. He gave us his WhatsApp number.
Yeah.
If you want, we call him now.
Okay.
And you talk to him. Is he surprised or no?
Well, I had a surprise. Which
that's
is good.
The surprise I have for you.
just emotional because you lived for so long with this and you don't know what happened to him.
He's waiting for us now.
Okay. That's a good surprise.
Yeah.
A smiling man wearing a baseball cap appears on the call. Kinsey says, "Nephew, peace be with you." "Hello." Here he is. Get to know each other. She passes the phone to Mo. "Yes, brother, what is happening?" "I'm well. How have you been?"
"Well, I can't believe I'm speaking to you. I carry your name, and for many, many years I carry that with me. And I'm proud of, you know, what I have achieved. But as a person, I always wonder, where's Muhammad? Where is he? Okay? What would life been like for him? I think about it all the time, and in person I just wanted to get in touch and to see how you're doing. Are you happy? Do you have family? You have kids? You married?
No, not yet. Not yet.
Okay. It's hard to say everything, but
yeah, I can see. It's okay. Just talk. It's okay.
Have you ever seen me run?
I saw you only on television.
Okay. Are you any good at running or
me? No.
Are you a football fan?
Arsenal fan. Arsenal.
They both grin broadly.
We're okay then. We're okay. Are you allowed to travel to the UK?
Am I allowed?
Yes.
I don't think so. I would love to come to UK.
I would personally like to meet you. I will try my best to make that happen.
Inshallah.
I just want to say one thing to you. Thank you so much. I use your name. I came here as a child, and I just want to say thank you. And it's been hard. Difficult.
It's okay. You're still my brother.
Yeah. Well.
Blessing.
Okay. Bye-bye, brother. I will wait for you. Call me on your number.
You will. Bye-bye. Take a look after yourself and thank you.
Mo gazes at the phone and then embraces Kinsey.
And I mean it.
Don't even know what to say. It felt amazing. It felt like relief. I didn't get the answer that I was looking for. Why was I brought over here? I still don't know. But most importantly for me today, the answer I got, that relief from Muhammad saying, "You're still my brother." And for me, it's, I couldn't ask for a better thing. I feel like something has been lifted off of my shoulders. But that's just me. I don't know how everyone's going to see it.
Are you worried about what people will think?
People who love me and cares, like my mom, Kinsey, told me it's okay to say my real name. I'm starting to understand me. Me. Not Mohammed Farah. Me. Hussein Abdi Kahin.
In a reconstruction, a young boy, Mo, also known as Hussein Abdi Kahin, smiles broadly. His face morphs into that of Samo Farah, who's also wearing a big smile. Young Hussein running at full tilt through the dusty countryside. The woman who brought Mo to the UK was approached to give her account of what happened, but she did not respond. Sir Mohammed Farah will continue to use the name he has been known by since he arrived in the UK as a child. He is in regular contact with his namesake, Mohammed Farah.
Details of organisations offering information and support with modern-day slavery and victims of crime are available by going to the BBC Action Line website.